Welcome. My name is Chris Gilbertson, and this is the Secrets of the Extraordinarily Successful podcast, where I interview top experts and multimillionaires in the areas of business, marketing, and mindset to help you explode your business and create a lifestyle of your dreams. So tune in weekly as I share key insights from these interviews to help you master your mindset, learn simple strategies that easily grow your business, and teach you the roadblocks to avoid on your journey. And to learn how to drive more traffic to your website, double your email opt-in rate, and easily increase sales in your business and create passive income, make sure to subscribe at www.chrisgilbertson, that's Chris with a K, for free multimedia marketing updates to help you in your business. Now for today's episode. All right, well, welcome. I am so excited for today's show. I'd like to welcome John Romanello, who is better known as Roman, and he's actually based in New York City, but he's known worldwide as a fitness expert, and he's the founder of Roman Fitness Systems, and he's a personal trainer, coach, author, and model. And what's so awesome about John is he's helped so many people, thousands of people all across the world, men and women, literally surpass their goals and achieve the body of their dreams. And he's been featured all over the place. Men's Health, Men's Fitness, T-Nation Shape, Yahoo, you name it, he's been there. And what's so exciting is he's releasing his newest book just in a few days titled Man 2.0 Engineering the Alpha. So I want to dive deep into picking John's brain and getting learning more about how he can help you achieve what you're looking for in fitness. And so, John, welcome. So excited to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's really, really great to be here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening to me ramble. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely. We're excited. So tell me, like I start all my interviews, how did you break into your field and become the expert?
Sure. That is a great question. And with regard to the fitness industry, it's certainly very relevant. Like many fitness professionals, I was a fat kid, and that was not fun. Womp womp. And so I actually went through a body transformation when I was about 20 years old, and my life changed in a number of dramatic ways, and everything got better. I mean, there were new complications that arose because of the transformation, but by and large, everything got better. My confidence increased, and it gave me sort of the drive to help other people, because it really had changed my life and I knew it could do the same for others. And I just wanted to sort of pass that gift on. I had been very fortunate to have a few great mentors who helped me, and to be able to help other people was really inspiring. And so, although I was in school at the time, I was double majoring in psychobiology and English. I'm very interesting to talk to, but not qualified to hold a job of any kind. So I was double majoring, and I just really started training people, and I loved it. When I finished school, obviously you think, all right, I'll just keep going to school or go back to school, grad school. And I decided to take a few years off and pursue training just as sort of a for now thing. I think there was a period where I just thought it would be temporary, was what I was doing, but it wasn't my career. And then I just kept falling more and more deeply in love with it the more successful that I got. I picked up my first professional athlete when I was around 24, and my business just exploded, and I was doing great. I was making six figures a year by the time I was like 24 years old, doing something I love and effectively going to work in my pajamas. And my friends who were using their degrees, you know, they were making 40 grand a year doing things they weren't in love with. And so I figured this is probably the best, but this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And right around the time things just kept growing, and I was writing more, and it's exploded, and it's been really fantastic.
Yeah. It's amazing what you've been able to create. And it's so outstanding to be able to come from your passion. So I was listening to Abel's podcast the other day that you were on, and you were talking about how, you got into the fitness, and then going from, you know, chubby kid quote to, you know, fit, that there was a big mental shift there for you, and then you had to keep up with that. So I'd love for you to share that, because I think any transformation, people go through that.
Right. Anytime you go through any dramatic change, there's mental trauma. Not necessarily bad trauma, but it is a traumatic experience. And for me, well, for everyone, I think that going through any sort of huge change is almost like, it can almost result in like a PTSD type of thing, because it is this really traumatic experience. And for me, although the changes were by and large beneficial, it created a lot of what Abel called head trash, which happens because you just you see the different way that people react to you. The story I always tell is I worked at a summer camp from the time I was about 18 till I was like 24. And it was great camp, affluent kids. Like the job description of camp is to play sports and hit on lifeguards, and that's it. And so the difference in summer 2001 working at day camp and the summer 2002 was just so extreme. It was a big camp, large staff, 300 or 400 people. Half of them were women. 90% of the women were hot. And just this sort of weird thing that happens when you understand that people are treating you differently because of how you look, mm-hmm. sort of creates an interesting shift in how you perceive them. And then with regard to women, there's a lot of sex in the book, so we'll talk about women. It was a really interesting time. Obviously, one of the main impetus to go through a body transformation when you're a 20-year-old guy is because you want to look better so you can have more sex and date more girls. And I think that's the same for everyone, right? We're all like, even at the core of it, when you're 20 and you're not looking for a lifetime mate, you're still looking for a mate. Sex drive is really powerful. And so every type of reaction, every type of interaction that I had with women changed fundamentally, like starting that summer. It was really weird because all of a sudden I got what I wanted and I had all these women interested in me. But in my head, I was still the chubby kid. And I had never learned many of the skills that come along with people flirting with you from the time you're 15 until you're 20. I was starting 5 years behind everyone else. So I was not good at picking up the cues that women were putting down when they were interested. I couldn't tell when someone was interested and when they were not interested. I remember one time specifically, I was sure this girl was into me. And I just, you know, we were hanging out consistently and moved in for a kiss. And she's just like, oh, we're friends. Is that how? And the funniest thing was that I'm so hilarious in awkward situations because I'm just like, okay, explain, like, how was I supposed to know that? What are the things that I should look for next time? How do I know I'm in the friend zone? What is
Yep.
Then there was this other girl later that summer who I was hanging out with, and I like never, I didn't make a move at all. And we were at this big house party out on Long Island. And we had been hanging out for like 6 weeks. Literally nothing happened. And so I got out to my car and she had left a note on the windshield that said, why won't you kiss me? Are you gay? It's okay. I won't tell anyone. And I was like, oh. So there's like, what do I do? How do I?
Yeah.
So
it's a crazy field to navigate.
I mean, you are mystical creatures. And so I think ultimately my point is that it was difficult to learn new social interaction. And then what happened is once I learned it, and I got very adept at it very quickly, so by the end of that summer, like early fall the next year, the shift was dramatic. And now I was like someone who had been deprived for 20 years, was like starving for 20 years, and now has all this food in front of him and just can't stop eating. And so, you know, the early part of my 20s were just filled with extreme promiscuity and fun and partying and all the things that I think many people's 20s should be filled with, not everyone. And it really became, so the challenges that I faced outside of learning how to deal with women was learning how not to deal with women and learning how to be okay with being in a relationship and not go stir crazy because there's these options that I'm not accessing. Right. And that was hard for me. That's really difficult for a lot of men. And in the interviews for the book, of which there are over 300, we talked a lot about just perceptions of sex and your perception of your own sexuality and how important it is. And I'm very, very fortunate that I have come out not quite as messed up as I should be, because it's a really weird thing. And then you get involved in modeling, and that's a whole other – basically for me, everything in life, I always view any sort of change as you're exchanging one set of complications for another. And the problems of being unattractive were certainly real. And the problems that come with being attractive are infinitely preferable, but there are still problems, and people don't talk about that. It was a really weird thing. And having been on both sides of it and internalizing that shift, I just think is an important thing, because so many of the people that I work with, I've helped people lose 200 pounds. Your life changes overnight. Just changes. Everything is different. Or you, even if you lose 20 pounds and you go from being a regular person to being hot traditionally, you know, whatever, things are different for you. Every time you go to the bar, if you're a woman, you're going to notice things are different. And it can really mess with your head, because the overriding thought process is, are people really this shallow? And then you just start judging people based on their shallowness. And someone is coming up to you to talk to you and having this conversation with you, and they're trying to be interested in you, and all you could think is that they're a bad person. And so it really, really screws with you. So there's a lot of therapy involved. things have worked out well, and I'm happy to report that my relationships with women are certainly more successful now. I no longer have close female friends, because I slept with all of them. But I don't think it's good for me to have them. I am better in relationships now, and recently engaged. And
yes, congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm super pumped. She's literally the greatest human being that's ever lived.
She's amazing. Nagar is amazing. Yeah.
Star Fanuni is the boss. She is amazing. I'm just going to pimp her out real quick. If you guys don't know my fiance, NagarFanuni.com. She is one of the top five female kettlebell experts in the world, nutrition expert, unbelievable physique. It's her abs are better than mine, and just wonderful, wonderful person, incredible fiance, great. She's the best cook ever. Even my own mother does not cook the way Nagar cooks. It's incredible. And Nagar herself is an amazing mother to a wonderful 7-year-old now. Boy, Isaac, my stepson, and it's been a wild ride. If you had asked me last year if I ever thought I would get married, I would have only said yes, but just because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And you know, I met her, and everything changed. And within 2 weeks, I knew I was going to marry her. And
really?
Then, oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Within 2 weeks of knowing her, I knew that I wanted to marry her. Mm-hmm. And then once we sort of started dating, I knew that I was going to. And I was incapable of not telling her. And within 3 or 4 weeks of dating, I was like, I'm going to marry you. And then I was like, oh my God, you can't say that out loud. You got to play it slow. It's like all of the lessons.
Right.
And I just went out the window. I just blurted it out. And thankfully she did not run. And she said yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. How did you guys meet? Do you mind sharing that story?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really... it's very cogent to the type of business that you and I are in. I met Nagar the same way I meet pretty much everyone in my life, and that's the internet. I was aware of her blog, and we had a lot of mutual friends we had never met. She was apparently a big fan of my blog and had a little crush on me, which I didn't know until after. And then one day she was teaching a workshop in New York City and we had exchanged a few emails a month or two prior, reached out, would you like to grab coffee? And normally when people in the fitness industry are asking me for coffee, it's up and coming guys who want to mirror the success that I've had. Mm-hmm. Essentially, can I buy you $5 worth of coffee and you give me $5,000 worth of business advice?
Exactly.
But I do it because I love helping people. And I like coffee. So Nagar and I went to coffee. And normally those meetings last 45 minutes to an hour. And so then 4.5 hours later, she's like, oh, God, I have to go. I have to catch my train to go home. And I was like, do you? So she actually did have to go home. She did not stay. But then we, ran into each other at a conference, 3 weeks later, and hung out, and then things just happened.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. I'm so happy for you, for both
Thank
of you.
You.
That's so exciting.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I want to kind of just rewind a little bit on what you were talking about with the mindset. So how do you help your clients make that transition?
So you can't go through a physical transformation without going through a mental one. And it just, the way that I tell them to deal with it is to shut out external noise, because it really can be very strange to allow those things to filter in. All of, you know, you have no people interested in you because you're 250 pounds, and then you get down to like 180 and you've got this muscle, and you know, women love you, and it's just the chirping, it can be really bad. So I normally tell people, before you're like ready to start taking your body for a test drive, just relax for a bit. Just get to know yourself, get to know what you like, get to know what you need to do to maintain this lifestyle, and hang out with the people. It's like being famous, right?
Yeah.
If you become famous and then you only hang out with people who know you as a famous guy, I would imagine, again, I am not famous, but my perception, having trained a number of celebrities, is that all that you're amazing, this stuff, it just filters in. Whereas if you do an entourage style and just hang out with the same five people you've been friends with your whole life, who knew you before you made money, or who knew you before you went through a body transformation, those people keep you grounded, because they will help you reestablish equilibrium.
Right.
Very important. So just hang out with your family, your friends. I have the same group of friends since I'm 31 now. I have been best friends with the guys who were the best men in my wedding, my two best men, since I was 17. And they're just great guys. And they knew me when I was fat. They knew me when I was making no money. Mm-hmm. They knew me like when I was in that phase where I was just screwing up constantly with women. And so they've seen the physical transformation. They've seen the financial, the business transformation. And they've seen the emotional and relationship transformation. And through it all, they have been the people that have allowed me to not stray too far.
Yeah.
They really do help me stay grounded is not really the right word, but just stay not crazy is the thing.
Well, and that's a great point, because in anything, whether you're starting out as an entrepreneur, making a shift in fitness, you need to have that surrounding around you to pull you back, to bring right. you out of your shell, whatever you need, you know, help with. So I think that's outstanding to talk about that. So, what I'd love for you to talk about is, what are some of the other roadblocks that you've had to overcome? Because you do so much. I mean, you're not just fitness. I mean, you do consulting, you do so many other things. So yeah. I'd love for you to share that.
This is like a really terrible thing to say. I have not run into a lot of business roadblocks at all. I have been really fortunate in the sense that my executive vice president says that I just have a really strong frame. And he says, you're the only person I've ever known who says, I'm going to do something, and then it just happens. And you just do it. You put yourself in a position to make it happen.
Right.
And it's not that things have never gone wrong. I don't care when stuff screws up, because what are you going to do? I don't stress about it.
Right.
And so the biggest roadblock I've ever had is me just getting out of my own way. And the same thing that every single person who wants to do something runs into: overcoming inertia. I have this idea for a great product and I'm like, oh, I should do that. And then I just never start, can't finish if you don't start. Or the people who want to make body transformations, oh, I want to do this, like I did for years. I wanted to be, from the time I was 12 years old, I wanted to be ripped. Mm-hmm. And it took until I was 20. It took a literal 8 years before I was finally able to get there. And so I have always been my worst enemy and the biggest impediment to my success, just getting out of my own way and not falling off track and getting distracted too much. And the only way I've been able to do that is to surround myself with good people. I have a great team, and they save me from spending a lot of time doing things that I'm really not interested in and therefore not very good at, and just letting me do the things that I need to do, like being the face of the business and generating content. I write every word that's on my website. And Adam and I, my co-author, we wrote every word of the book. I know a lot of people who write books have ghostwriters, which to me is I don't understand ghostwriters. I don't understand personally how you could have a book with your name on it and not have bled on those pages.
Yeah, I agree.
More to the point, I don't understand the philosophy. Like, how can you be a ghostwriter and write a 60 or 80,000 page book and be okay with not having your name on it for like $30,000?
Some just of them aren't, I don't think.
I don't think so. No. It's crazy to me. I would never, I can't imagine. So yeah, those are the things that I need to focus on. I need to focus on this, you and I, this moment right here, and not worry about the fact that something might be going wrong with my shopping cart, and let my executive vice president handle that, because he is really good at managing those things, and right. I am not. So,
well, that's a ton of great information, though, because a lot of people, when they get started in their business, they're trying to manage too many things at once. They're not showing up where they show up the best. And that holds people back, and getting yourself out of the way. So, I mean, you're a big personal development person, though, too. You've read a lot of books, which I think has really enabled you to succeed as quickly as possible with what you've done. So can you, well, I don't know, maybe that's just my perception, but can you share some of the things that you've read and what has changed your perspective for being able to just get out there and take action?
Oh, the things that, I mean, in terms of business, certainly the 4-hour work week, I remember reading that. It was right around the time I was getting involved in the online business, and that book, so this is 2009, it was only 2 years after its release, so that book is still, very, very highly regarded, but it was really sort of gospel at that point. It was like a holy book, and which must feel weird for Tim to have his book essentially be regarded as holy writ in the internet and marketing communities.
Mm-hmm.
So I read that book, and it really changed my mindset, and the crazy thing was that as I was reading the 4-Hour Workweek, this is a testament to Tim's writing, I felt like I knew him. I felt like I was there with him taking all those adventures. And more importantly, I felt like we would be friends. I feel like, I'm like, you know, if Tim and I met, we would be boys. We would totally get along. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, I was right. I remember I read that in 2009. I said, I'd really like to meet this guy. It'd be cool to hang out with. And I put myself in position to meet him. And now, you know, we're boys. I mean, he's a great guy. He's a great friend of mine. All of the other stuff, this is what I'm talking about, like being famous, like whatever Tim must experience on a micro level in the internet, all the people who only know him from after his books constantly like just fanboying him and me consciously not taking that approach and just like getting to know him as a friend and like be really appreciating him as a human being. Tim is a strong individual for not letting that come into his headspace and for staying so humble. And he's always hat in hand. And Tim is very well aware that he could ask me to do anything and I would do it because it behooves me to do so, because that relationship is valuable and he can be of service to me. But he's never like, yo, do this thing. He's always like, hey, man, if you have time, do you think you could? And it's just like a different way of interacting. He's a very respectful guy and he hasn't let all of that stuff into his head. So the 4-Hour Workweek was life-changing for me. The Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, really just a great meditation on life. And I think a truly well-written and enjoyable and insightful book was very helpful for me in terms of just I think learning about life. And I think that I really enjoyed that book simply because my parents split up when I was 10 and I did not have a relationship with my dad really. And so it was a very paternal way of telling a story. And so I think it resonated with me very strongly. And I think that it sort of formed the ideas about the type of man that I want to be. And finally, the one that is the most formative for me is The Hero with 1,000 Faces by Joseph Campbell. And this is a dissertation essentially on comparative mythology, where Campbell makes the argument that every story essentially follows the same path, the 17-stage plot point journey called the hero's journey. And I really fell in love with it because I love mythology, and it just made sense to me after I read that. The next time I watched Star Wars, I was like, oh, it's right there. Yeah, it's all there, all those steps. They just happened. And when I read The Lord of the Rings again, I'm a big, big nerd, big Lord of the Rings fan. I read Lord of the Rings every year right around the holidays since I was 11. So every year I read the trilogy. I have a Lord of the Rings tattoo on my ribs.
You do.
I do. It's actually my largest. I have like 7 tattoos. The Lord of the Rings one is the biggest piece.
Oh, that's funny.
So I'm a big nerd. But reading that book after I read Campbell made that book better. I believe that reading Hero with a Thousand Faces made everything I read in every movie I watched after that point better. And that, to me, is amazing. And I'm like, that's so crazy that you can have that sort of impact.
Yeah.
And it's really become sort of part of my world to you. And I look at the hero's journey not only as a storytelling methodology, but also as a lens through which to view change and also a thesis for problem solving.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I'm definitely going to check the last one out for sure. So I kind of want to transition back over into some of the more the fitness type questions now too, because a lot of stuff that I've read with you is that you said you made a lot of mistakes in the beginning transforming your body. And I'd love for you, because I mean, there's so much stuff out there and there's so much bad information out there for fitness. And I'd love for you to kind of talk about that and what's the best way to go about starting to transform your body.
The best way? Oh, that's a great question. Oh, wow. Well, the best way is to buy the book and just do it.
Just do it. Get it now.
The best way is really to just do anything. And that's the main thing. People just – the overcoming inertia is impossible for most people. They just can't, for whatever reason, start. And because I think they get overwhelmed. And – the simplest thing to do is just start with 5 minutes. There was this study, I'm trying to remember where I read it, but it was a really interesting paper that talked about trying to get people to make changes. Mm-hmm. And when you start with a small change, there was this one example where it was said that if you're the type of person that doesn't floss your teeth, then that is part of your self-perception. I'm just not a flosser. And then your goal is to floss one tooth. Just dedicate yourself to flossing just one tooth. And within a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you're eventually going to convince yourself, well, this is a bit ridiculous, and I guess I am the type of person who flosses their teeth now, so I'll just do it. And then it becomes this habit. Same thing with training. You know, just start with 5 minutes. Just commit yourself to 5 minutes. You know, 10 push-ups, 10 bodyweight squats, 10 reverse lunges, plank, and you're done. And that's it. Just do that once or twice and you're done. Just commit to doing that like every day or every other day for 2 months. And then when you think about starting a routine, it's going to seem very simple. So, you know, I think that a lot of people have trouble with that. That was not one of the mistakes that I made once I got started. Those were legion, but mostly they involve just learning a little bit and not learning a lot. So I think that a little bit of information is a very dangerous thing. Mm-hmm. People do is they read a book like, let's say, Body for Life, which is a great book and was super successful. And I know Bill very well. And I feel very fortunate to have had that book early on during my transformation. And the problem with that book is that the way that it talks about food, for example, it says just eat a portion of protein and a portion of carbs. And that's a really good start. And that's what I did. But I was drastically under eating because I had a high level of musculature. But I ate that way for months and months and months. And I was probably eating 1500 calories on low days and maybe, 1800 on high days. And I was just not really eating enough. And I think that happened was that I just didn't learn about calorie formulas and macronutrient ratios. I stopped here and I should have gone 2 steps later. And so I definitely think that I inhibited my progress for the first 4 or 5 months. I still made great progress. I lost a lot of weight, but I think I probably could have not sprinted the whole time and still made progress.
Right.
Just being so completely balls to the wall.
Yeah. So with your clients then, because you have, you know, a different take in the model world and in the competition world, with people that are just trying to make that first leap, what are the 5 steps you walk them through to keep it simple to get them started?
First thing is just keep a food log. Because here's the thing. you know what you shouldn't be eating. Everybody knows what you shouldn't eat. Not a lot of people know what they should eat, and so they fill their cart instead with a lot of gray area stuff. They want to move away from eating sugary cereals, so they eat kashi, which is a step in the right direction, but you have two bowls of kashi a day, you're still getting 80 grams of carbs, and it's not the best thing. And so what I always do is I have people keep a food log. And I'm like, I'm not going to judge you. I don't even need to look at it for the first month. Just write down everything you eat, everything you put in your mouth. LOL, sex joke. But write down everything that you eat and drink for a month. And what you see is when you look at that food journal, it is absolutely hilarious how things change from week one to week three. People know what they shouldn't do. And as soon as you start writing it down and you have to look at it at the end of the day, and you're just like, man, two donuts. I probably shouldn't have done that. And it's right. The evidence is there.
Yep.
And so writing things down creates tangibility, which is really important. And it's some level of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
So writing things down. And then after the first month, I go over the food log with them. And I was like, let's look at the things you know you shouldn't be doing. When you look at that week four, there's still some things that they need to work on. But the most important thing that we try to do is not eliminate too much, but rather add. We want to add the vegetables and the lean proteins, just put those things in. Mm-hmm. And so that's if I'm handling the nutrition for my client, that's what I do. If the client is handling the nutrition themselves, in the sense that I design it for them and they do everything else, this is my online people. My online clients are very different from my in-person clients. My in-person clients fall into one of two camps. They're either very high-level people, bodybuilders, trainees, athletes, celebrities, or they're – I don't want to say regular people. At this point in my life, I only take in-person clients who I want to be networked with, so who can help my business in some way outside of paying me $300 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Gary Vaynerchuk is a personal training client. So with Gary, food logs and portions, and I just try to work within there because he doesn't need to be super hardcore. My online clients are almost always advanced trainees. They're just the people who find me online and want to work with me. Or in general, I think people who are interested in online personal training
mm-hmm.
are generally self-starters anyway, and they have a fair level of baseline knowledge. And the way that we handle that for those people is every single client for at least 3 months has to track calories and macros and weigh their food, because I believe that these people are trying to take it to the next level, and that's trial by fire. You need to do it. It's very helpful.
Yeah.
So that's how I deal with it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, do you set up customized, I mean, because you coach a lot of women and you coach a lot of men too. So, and I was reading one of your blog posts that I love where it says, do women need to train differently? And I think there's been a perception out there, like with weights and with what women can do and what's going to happen. So do you set up, tell us about how you do that with different body types and how you set up the programs.
Absolutely. Well, it really depends on goal. And the thing that really changes things the most is the free time that you have to dedicate to training and the availability of equipment. When we have people who are in gyms, that's the program design is very different. For example, if I have a guy who trains at home and he has a full gym in his house, it's very easy. If he trains at a crowded commercial gym, I can't program any chest exercise for his Monday workout because he's just never going to get it. It's going to mess up the flow.
Yeah.
So that really factors in. If people are interested in kettlebells, that factors in. Do they have equipment? So the training programs are all based on my general outlook, which is for fat loss, we use a lot of metabolic resistance training and some bodyweight conditioning, and generally also throw in heavy weights to increase and maintain strength and lean body mass. And for muscle building, there's a different approach. So the thing that really differs is working around people's pre-existing conditions and working within whatever constraints or criteria that exist based on their lifestyle and all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of nutrition, I have about 20 custom calorie formulas, 10 for men and 10 for women. Actually, now if I'm thinking about it, it's really probably – no, yeah, that might be about right. Yeah. So I have 10 for men and 10 for women. And the custom calorie formulas are more advanced than the ones that you'll find online. the very simple calorie formulas just tell you to take your weight and multiply it by some number, and that's how many calories you should eat. But what's the problem there? There's no differentiation between lean body mass and fat mass. And so you're really just eating to maintain your body or lose a little bit of weight, but you're not differentiating. And that's not what most people want. So then the more sophisticated ones, they have you calculate your lean body mass and then multiply by that. But there's still a hole missing because they don't take fat mass into account. And so my calorie formulas calculate, they're based around lean body mass and fat mass. Your baseline level of calorie intake will be lower if you have a lot of fat on your body because, I mean, simply put, if you want, you know, this isn't going to be scientific jargon, but the fact is that fat people lose weight faster. They don't need to eat as much food. It's much easier to maintain your lean body mass on 13 calories per pound of lean body weight if you have 60 pounds of fat to lose. So, you know, it's just, to me, it's this crazy concept that if one guy is, let's say, 200 pounds and 10% body fat, and another guy is 360 pounds and 50% body fat, they both have the same amount of lean mass. Do you really think that that calorie formula is enough, that it's enough to work for both people? So to make them more sophisticated, we take body fat into account. And so every client has their calories and macronutrients carefully calculated based on where they start. And then we retest every 2 weeks, and generally speaking, things change once per month.
Oh, wow. That's outstanding. So you talk a lot about with your dynamic fitness approach. So talk a little bit more about that and how you are different from other trainers out there today.
I'm really not. I mean, is the simple way. Here's the thing. At the highest level, everybody is good. And the thing is that even when I'm different from other trainers in the way that I approach things, ultimately we're all offering the same product. We're all offering a better body. And that doesn't change, you know? So the difference between working with me or Craig Ballantyne or Joel Marion or any of the other big online fitness guys, in the end, you're going to look the same. You're going to make the same progress. The approach might be different, but that's more important to coaches than it is to clients. The real thing that makes me different is who I am, not what I offer. I am a funny, well-read writer who happens to write about fitness. And that, rather than being a trainer who is forced to write because he wants to be successful on the internet, I view myself as a writer first. That's really appealing for a lot of people. The crazy thing is that I just have always, my business model has always been just be me professionally. I don't pull my punches. I'm not afraid to drop F-bombs. I've been very courteous here.
Yes, you have. But you're fine. Be yourself.
But in general, I'm not shy about dropping F-bombs. I'm not shy about talking about sex or anything. In fact, my co-author Adam and I were scheduled to be on a local LA radio station. That's why I'm actually out here in California. We were a TV station. We were supposed to do some TV stuff. So I flew out here because we had TV stuff on Thursday. And they booked it before they read the book. And then they canceled because of the language.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. And you know, so our PR people from our publisher called and they're like, oh, so what do you want to do there? And my response was, well, fuck them. I don't care.
Yeah.
Because, like, what are you going to do?
That's crazy. Yeah.
Joke. So my reaction is never, ever worry about the people who hate you. Because for every person who's not into you, there's 10,000 people who, because I use that language and because I talk about the things I talk about, I'm the only guy they want to listen to.
Yeah.
The thing that's different about me is that I'm me. And there are some people, there are a lot of people who have emailed me. They're like, hey, listen, I read your blog, but this one went too far. I'm not going to be coming back anymore. I just thought you would want to know. And, you know, so if you're interested in feedback, and I was like, hey, I'm really interested in feedback. I appreciate the email and I understand your perspective. I'm not going to change, but since this is the thing that bothered you, here's a list of five people who you can look at who don't do those things and who might be a better fit for you. Just because you're not interested in me talking about what I talk about or talking about fitness the way I talk about it doesn't mean I don't want you to get good results or I don't care about your fitness anymore. I'm very happy for you to go hang out with all the trainers who don't curse or talk about blowjobs or whatever else. Like, that's life.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I love that you do that, though, because, I mean, it really is. It comes down to a personal preference, and like you said, for the one that isn't into you, then, you know, there's other people out there. So,
yeah. So yeah. The thing that makes me different is me. And so the way that I would phrase that, if you're looking for a sound bite, people don't buy coaching. They buy coaches. So who signs up with me, who buys my products? Those are because people are interested in me first, and the service and the results probably second.
Yeah. I love that. Total tweetable there. I love it. That's brilliant. So I want to talk about what are your thoughts on CrossFit? Because it's huge.
Sure. Yeah. I think that CrossFit is generally good. I don't I think that that whole cultish mentality is a little weird. But I love a lot of the things about CrossFit. I think that for average people looking to lose fat and just get in shape, it's absolutely fine. If you're at a good CrossFit box. The problem is that this was not really an issue about 5 years ago, because when CrossFit first started getting popular 5 or 6 years ago, really five, who were the CrossFit coaches? They were people who were already personal trainers and then who moved towards CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Now, all you need to do to be a CrossFit coach is you just need to take this weekend certification course, and you don't need to be certified, you don't need to have experience, you don't need to show mastery of technical skills or how to coach people. And a lot of the people who are opening CrossFit boxes now are people who just fell in love with CrossFit, and now that's what they want to do with their lives. I have a friend of mine who's a doctor. She went to med school. She paid $250,000 for education, and she's like, I wish I could just quit my job and just open a CrossFit box, guys. I love it. I love the environment. But she can't because she's got a lot of debt. So the problem is, like, assuming she did that, this woman, this friend of mine, she's never coached anyone. But she would be able to open a CrossFit box. The only thing you need to do to open a CrossFit box is pass your certification, put the word CrossFit in your name, and pay your royalties. That's it. And so the speed at which CrossFit has grown is the reason that all of the things that make people hate CrossFit exist. All these people getting hurt, all of the super bad form that you see in the YouTube videos, that comes about because it's inexperienced coaches. But that's not exclusive to CrossFit, and that's why I don't hate on CrossFit, because you're going to find shitty coaches everywhere. Mm-hmm. Any type of training. I'm sure there are shitty Zumba instructors. Whatever it is, there's some people who are good and some people who are bad. So I think that CrossFit's not there yet, but I think they'll get there, because in any industry, quality always shows.
Yeah.
It will out. And if you're good, you'll rise to the top. And if you're bad, you'll be found out, and eventually you'll go out of business. Yeah. That's just how it is. So I'm a big fan of the community of CrossFit. And I think it's a great, generally good. And the workouts are super hard. I like them. They're fun.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love it. So I want to talk about cheat days now, because I was just watching you within the 4-hour chef. Or I think it was that one, right?
Yeah.
And you and Tim go to town. And so I want to talk to you, because that's also intermittent fasting, because that's a new term coming up. So talk about that and how people can incorporate that and why it works and
absolutely
why to do it.
So I will try to explain this with as few scientific terms as possible, because I believe that the fitness industry is filled with like smart people trying to sound like meatheads and meatheads trying to sound like smart people. So I'd try to be right in the middle. So cheat days. The reason that cheat days work is because when you diet, your metabolism begins to slow down. And that is because there's a hormone called leptin, which is responsible for the production of T3 and T4, thyroid hormones, which we all know facilitate fat burning. Leptin is produced in fat cells. So the more fat you have, the more leptin you have, which means the easier it is to burn fat, as I said, fat people lose weight quicker. Mm-hmm. But leptin levels are also dependent on caloric intake. And as soon as you start eating fewer calories, now you have two things working against you. You're probably losing fat, so your leptin levels are, your baseline is lower, but they're also dropping down because you're not eating enough. And a cheat day bumps leptin levels back up and allows you to lose weight faster. Or at the very least, it doesn't slow down fat loss and it gives you a psychological reprieve. So it's really very, very simple. It's you eat because you can. It speeds up your metabolism. So that's cheat days. They're awesome. What Tim and I did in the 4-hour chef is we each ate a Vermonster, which is a Ben and Jerry's confection, which contains 20 or 24 scoops of ice cream. It's three brownies, two cookies. I think it's two bananas.
It's insane. It's an insane amount of ice cream.
It's 14,000 calories worth of sugar, essentially, and fat. And they're meant to be shared by 5 to 8 people, and that's why they sell them at scoop shops. They do them for, like, kids' parties, and they serve it in this big bucket and whatever. And for whatever reason, Tim and I decided to each eat one. I can't tell you why. I remember specifically we went in to do this, and I said, "Why are we doing this again?" And he said, "To see what'll happen." And
Of course.
That's his answer to legitimately everything. So yeah. I'm like, I don't even know why I asked. So what we were doing there is illustrating a point. Like, obviously, my cheat days do not normally include 14,000 calories worth of ice cream. But the point is that I'm so confident in the science of why cheat days work that I'm willing to put my body on the line and eat 14,000 calories worth of ice cream to prove that this works. Because it works, and yeah, it's fun. You know, you don't, like, I believe that people should have cheat days on Sunday, because if you're like me, you like to watch football on Sunday. And I can't prove this with science, but I am confident, factually confident, that football is more enjoyable when you're eating burgers and wings. I'm almost positive anyone in the world would agree with me. Not to mention, burgers and wings taste better when there's football on TV. Unless you're Jets, in which case food turns to ash in your mouth because the Jets are terrible. But yeah, so cheat days on Sundays, and then on Monday we fast, no food at all. So let's move into the second part of your question.
Yeah,
fasting. This really just means periods of pre-selected periods of not eating, of abstaining from food. And you can do this for anywhere from 16 hours, which is the lean gains Martin Birkin approach, all the way up to 36 hours, which is more my feast fast approach. You do that the day after your cheat day. And there's also 24 hours in the middle, which is popularized by Brad Pilon with Eat Stop Eat. So there's that. They all work. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Brad's way is eat regularly 5 days a week and then just don't eat at all 2 days a week. Birkin's is fast for 16 hours out of every single day. So you're just – you're condensing your meal timing to an 8-hour window. And the reason that fasting works, particularly the 16-8 method, it's probably the more sophisticated version, is that it allows for easier management of your hormonal environment. The less often you eat, the less often you produce insulin. When you're fasting in general, you're producing more growth hormones. So there's that. And they just have disproven studies that about, like, the metabolic fire, this nonsense that we all believed, all of us, so I'm not blaming anyone, mm-hmm, all believed for 10 or 15 years that you needed to eat 6 small meals because it would keep your metabolic fire burning. And
yeah,
that's been proven not to be true. There's really no metabolic difference in eating 3 meals versus 6 meals, or even 2 meals versus 1 meal. So I think that for most people, eating three meals is a lot easier. Imagine if you could cook half as much. Like, how much, how great would that be?
Less cleanup. Oh yeah, absolutely. So with your, when you do, cause it, so you have your cheat day on Sunday and then you go into intermittent fasting for the whole day. Are you taking like branched chain amino acids too? Or what are you doing to keep the protein?
Yes. Great. So I will do branched chain amino acids after my workout. I try not to do them pre-workout or early in the morning because they're pretty insulinogenic. So just bring insulin levels up. So yeah, just for me, BCAAs and water and occasionally some green tea. Nagar does coffee and BCAAs and water and green tea. So
okay.
Yeah, I'm just not drinking coffee anymore right now in general, but yeah.
So that's interesting. So is that your regular, I mean, that's every week that you do that. That's your schedule.
During football season, yes, absolutely. So really through, yeah, probably through the summer, from about midsummer to, I guess, October, November, December, whenever, you know, like all the way through football season, so really until the end of February, right. That's pretty much how I do it. And then starting in January, I tend to just eat a little bit more evenly for whatever reason, simply because I just have nothing to do on Sunday, so I don't need to cheat. But yeah, I don't know. I just find that having a cheat meal once a week when we go out to dinner mm-hmm. is more enjoyable than sitting down and, you know, just like gorging all day long.
Right. So, yeah. So now, is that what you have your clients do then too, on that same type of schedule?
Right. Yeah. It really depends on the client, what they want to do. Some people are not into cheat days. They'd rather have a cheat meal.
Right.
Some people are not into fasting, but in general, most of my clients use the approach that I generally use, which is feast on Sunday, fast on Monday, and then essentially Tuesday through Friday, 16-8 IF. So you just 16 hours of fasting. And then Saturday, sometimes I fast again completely just to sort of like make sure that everything is optimized for the cheat day.
Right.
And then sometimes I'll just do a protein only day. It'll really depend on my level of leanness and how I'm feeling.
So yeah, that's awesome. So how I found out about you is from Joel Marion, one of his like products, because I was traveling all the time and I wanted to change up my workouts in the, you know, the crappy little hotel gyms that you're in. And you guys had, one of his products was similar, kind of the same thing. It was a shorter period of time that he had people focus on this. Yeah. But what I want to ask you about is the workouts. When you're doing, what type of workouts should you be doing on fast days versus cheat days?
I mean, it really depends how, you know, high level you want to get. Okay. I think that everybody should just do a workout on a cheat day and on a fast day. But if you really want to get a little bit more technical, then you would just do a muscle building type workout on your cheat day immediately before you start cheating, because obviously you can create a lot of microtrauma because you're going to be having this influx of calories and nutrients that you can use to repair that. On the other hand, on fast days, you do more of a fat burning workout to just like reduce glycogen stores that you've just filled up. If you want to get even more specific on cheat days, we do density style training because, again, it does create a lot of microtrauma. And on non-cheat days, we do – or on fast days, rather, we do more of a lactic acid style where the goal is to produce a lot of lactic acid, which produces a lot of growth hormone. And then from there because when you're fasting, you're producing a lot of growth hormone anyway, so you're just sort of like supercharging that. So – there's a lot of different ways to do it. It depends on how esoteric you want to get.
Yeah.
But in general, that's the three levels.
Yeah. No, that's great. I love that. And I love the change up of the workouts too, because it brings variety for people and what they're doing. Yeah.
That part is fun.
Yeah. So what do you see as the next big fad and trends that are in, you know, coming down the pike for fitness?
Man. Well, intermittent fasting, I think we're sort of like in the phase where that's a trend. What else? Let's see. Well, I think that some of the stuff that we publish in this book is going to become a trend. I have very high hopes that this will be not just a bestseller, but a number one New York Times bestseller.
Yep.
And I think that the CrossFit trend is still going to like keep going for a while. And certainly there's all these like adventure races, the mud runs.
Yeah.
as for what's coming behind all of that, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you from a business perspective that I believe that gyms are going to go one of two directions. There's going to be very high-end gyms like Equinox and then low-end gyms like Planet Fitness, and everyone in the middle is going to get absolutely crushed.
Really?
I just think that's the way it's got to go. I think that if you're an independent gym charging $60 a month and Planet Fitness is down the road, they're going to charge $10 a month and people are going to go there. And then the people who can afford it are going to go to Equinox because there's always going to be a demand for a high-level service.
Right.
And that's just where it's going to go. And so in the place of these standard gyms, I think you're going to see more boutique service gyms open up. I think that once all the regular gyms close down in a given town, it's not going to be long before a hardcore powerlifting dungeon pops up, something like that. And then,
well, we're seeing that in Denver here. Everything's specialized for what they're at. So yeah, that's a really cool. So I want to do something really quick here. I had some questions from some people in the Facebook and Twitter community, and then I want to wrap up with your book on where everybody can get in touch with you. So Casey Demchuk asked, what do you feel about Paleo Primal and Zone, and what do you suggest for continued maintenance?
Paleo Primal Zone. I'm of all of those, I guess I would be, I'm most primal. Primal. I think Paleo is great. I'm a big fan of Rob Wolf. Mm-hmm. Of all the people, here's the weird thing about the paleo community, because there is a lot of like cultishness. Mm-hmm. The people at the very top are not cultish. Like the heads of state, the Rob Wolf and the Mark Sisson and the Lauren Cordain, it's like people two levels below, these people who consider themselves like paleo lieutenants, who are super militant and really like dogmatic. And I was just at Paleo FX.
That's so funny. Yeah.
It's so weird. It's always
true though.
Never these guys, it's these guys. And because people like to have shit to argue about on the internet.
Yeah, yes.
So I like paleo in general. I think it's a really good start. I don't think that paleo is necessary for everyone. And I think that a lot of people, myself for example, I don't have a problem with gluten. I did a 2 month long paleo experiment where I did the strictest version of paleo, right? Meat and veggies. I didn't eat potatoes or tubers or fruit, and I got all my blood work tested, and then I went to eating gluten for about 2 weeks and got my blood work tested, and there was really no change at all. The thing that was higher was like my baseline insulin levels, because all of a sudden I had carbs. But so I'm not sensitive to gluten. I'm a little bit sensitive to dairy. What I seem to be most sensitive to is fruit. High levels of fructose like bloat my belly, so I have a really bad reaction to that. So I think that paleo is a really good start. I think that everyone should do an elimination type diet and then slowly add those things back in to see what you need to eliminate, because not everyone does. I think that if you look at, let's say, food allergies across and incidence of gluten intolerance or celiac disease across racial boundaries, you're going to see a lot of changes. Something like 70% of people of Irish descent have some level of gluten intolerance, whereas in people of Italian descent, it's closer to 15. So there's all these different things that play in, because if you look at the culture of what a culture puts forth in its food, that's sort of like the cultural aggregate of what works for us, right?
Right.
So if a group of people have survived on pasta and dairy, like the Italians have, for 4,000 years, then the likelihood of anyone who was sensitive to those things, who had a bad reaction, having died off because of the immune problems that would follow, is very high. And so those people would not have reproduced. And so now the baseline Italian does not have these insensitivities. So I think that it's a good start. Paleo is a good start. Primal is a good start. That said, I still like gluten in general. When I go to restaurants that offer gluten-free dishes, I always ask for extra gluten. and then the waiter always looks at me and I'm like, well, it's free, isn't it? It says gluten-free.
Horrible.
It's such a bad joke, but it always gets a laugh. It's not a good joke. You don't have to pity me.
I'm not repeating it. Don't worry.
People laugh because it's like, oh, yep. Wordplay. But anyway, so I still have cheat days and I eat gluten and I'm fine with it. But if you don't eat gluten, you can still have cheat days. You could do wheat-free cheats. Nagar has some stuff on that. And we're actually writing an article on paleo cheat days.
Oh, fantastic.
Paleohacks.com. So that's going to be super fun. A lot of paleo baking. But you can do it. It's awesome. Yep. So second part of that question was maintenance. 500 calories below what you consider to be your maintenance calories, which you could use my calorie formulas for. And so do that 4 days a week, and then 3 days a week, just eat at maintenance.
Perfect. And then Jane Louise asks, what's the best way to break through a plateau?
When you have plateaued, it is almost, particularly at the lower levels of body fat, is almost always connected to your hormonal environment. Chances are, if you're only trying to lose last like 5 to 15 pounds, you're holding them in a specific area. For women, it's generally hips and thighs. For men, belly and love handles. And so there is a corresponding hormone for each of these things. So you'd want to address that. And if you're a woman and you're holding your fat in your lower body, then you would want to start looking at supplementation that would allow to move away from estrogen-related fat storage. A good example is Yohimbine HCL. Women have alpha-1 fat receptors concentrated in the lower body, and Yohimbi is an alpha-1 antagonist. So it'll actually block the fat at those receptors and help you lose fat from that area. Now, it's going to help you lose fat all over, but it'll make you exponentially less likely to store fat in that area. So that's just one example. So I have tons of stuff on my blog, which you could check out. And of course, hormones are featured heavily in Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha. So,
mm-hmm. Awesome. And then Michael Chomi asks, what do you feel about the future vitamins and supplements in regards to the FDA approval process?
I would really like to answer that question, but it's a can of worms that I'm not quite sure that I want to open. But in general, I think that supplements are the wild, wild west, and I don't think that it's changing anytime soon.
Okay. And last one, Natisha Walton, she's a fitness instructor, and she lectures on gluten-free and toxin-free. And so she's been a fitness instructor for over 10 years. And so she had a woman, so Natisha's small, she's a size 2, and she eats healthy and exercises, obviously, but she focuses on the 90-10 rule. And so she has a client that is struggling with eating disorders, and she doesn't feel, she says, do you deal with people with eating disorders? And if so, how do you change the mindset of someone that feels it's too regimented, like what we've been talking about here and what she teaches?
Honestly, this is, I keep bringing her up, not because I'm in love with her, but because she's good. Nagar Fanouni would be the person to talk to you about this. Anytime I have clients who struggle with this issue, I refer them to her. I have helped people recover from eating disorders, but something gets lost in translation online. And honestly, my methodology is really dependent on regimentation, at least in the beginning. So that's not my strong suit. So I would really say that I'm not qualified to answer that question, although I wish that I could.
Yep.
But check out Nagar, because she has a lot of stuff on helping people get away from that. So I don't believe that she herself ever struggled with an eating disorder, but she has a lot of clients who have. So
that's great. Okay, fantastic. Thank you. So the last thing I want you to share, and then our final question, but tell us about Man 2.0. Spill the beans.
All right. So I will make this super quick.
Oh, take your time.
Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha, is subtitled A Real World Guide to an Unreal Life, and it is a lifestyle guide masquerading as a fitness book. It is intended to help men become the best version of themselves. So you will burn fat, you will gain muscle, but you'll also increase testosterone and confidence. Your sex drive will go up. And I know that you probably have a lot of women who check out your podcast.
So a lot of men too, though, actually.
A lot of dudes as well. So guys, listen, if you're not interested in more muscle and less fat and more sex, I don't think you're my target market, so I don't think I can help you. But if you are interested in a higher sex drive and a better body and a keener intellect, because it's been shown that higher testosterone levels help with decision making, if you're interested in those things, check out engineeringthealpha.com. But for the ladies, If you have a man in your life, I would say this is a great book to get him because it's a super entertaining read. And even guys who don't like books have told me that they love this book, which is really, really cool. It's and the only other person I've heard that about is Tucker Max. So which is say what you want. But the guy moves books. So I think that women should buy for the men in the life because it will help them. Because men are not good at taking care of themselves. We often need the people around us to tell us simple things like, hey, you have 105 fever, maybe you should go to the doctor. Because men don't do that because we're big, dumb animals. And that's just how it is. So men aren't going to take care of the hormonal stuff on their own. And I think that this book from a woman will sort of help raise awareness. If you're a woman, I think you should also read it yourself because it will – some of the information is relevant to you. 95% of the fitness information is relevant to you and will work for you. But it also offers keen insight into the male psyche.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on it myself and read it. So I'm really excited about it. And the last question I want to talk about is, this is kind of like shifting gears completely from what we've been talking about today, but it's the 5-minute makeover question. So the $1 million question, if you had to start over from scratch today without knowing anyone, and without having the resources that you have now, what would you do to rebuild your empire?
I would do the same thing. I would just start writing and do the same thing I did, which was actively get published in as many places as possible. That would be my goal. Just for me, it's always been about, if you're a good writer and you increase visibility, eventually you'll blow up.
Yeah. Roman, this was absolutely amazing. Thank you for taking so much time and going through all of just phenomenal information today. So if everybody can tell us where everybody can find out about you, that would be fantastic.
Sure. You guys can check me out at romanfitnesssystems.com. And of course, you can pick up the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but we would love if you checked out our website, engineeringthealpha.com, because if you purchase there, we have tons of free shit we're going to give you. And we love giving away free shit.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. I'll have everything on my blog so everybody can find out that at chrisgilbertson.com, where you can connect with Roman and all of his products, books. And thanks again. It was a blast. Great having you on the show.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. I want you to know, guys, that we finished Under the Wire. My laptop battery is on 1% and I don't have it in this room. So I'm gonna hang up and go get plugged in. Thank you for having me, everybody. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Roman. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in. You were just listening to the interview with Roman from Roman Fitness Systems. And definitely head over to Chris Gilbertson, that's chriswithak.com, in order to sign up for all the bonuses that he and his team have put together. They are phenomenal for one book, three books. He's got an amazing set of bonuses for everybody tuning in. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review over in iTunes for us with a 5-star. Let us know your thoughts and stay tuned for more incredible interviews coming your way. Go out and make it a great day.